I've listened to Whoever's in New England by Reba McEntire for years.
And I listened to it once yesterday.
Welcome to Spin It. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Spin It, the record-ranking podcast for people who would rather be listening to music. I'm James, and with me is Connor.
Coming at you live from New England.
Are you? That'd be fun if we could do that and, like, record on location.
Yeah, I'm not, but whoever's in New England, they should do that.
Yeah, they should. That's exciting. Yeah, this week we're talking about a single mom who works two jobs, loves her kids, never stops, with gentle hands and the heart of a fighter. It's Reba McEntire. That's good. That kind of rhymes, too.
She's a survivor.
But can she survive our ratings?
Only time will tell.
Yeah, we'll see what scores she ends up with.
Did you watch Reba? Have you seen all of Reba?
All of it? No. Oh. But I've seen a lot. I don't even know if I could say a lot of it. I've seen a reasonable chunk.
Okay, yeah. You've seen it on. You know, like, the basic
premise.
Yeah,
I know Reba.
You've seen several episodes. It's a great show. You should watch it.
I've seen a lot of it. I couldn't tell you how much of it there is, so I couldn't tell you if I've seen most of it. But it really is great. Quite entertaining.
There's 6 seasons of Reba.
Okay.
I don't know how much of that do you think you've seen?
Oh, I don't know. Probably I've seen 4 dozen episodes.
It's not a lot.
Well, I guess not. That's probably 2 full seasons. That's a third of it, at least.
Hey, and, you know, Van, the actor who plays Van, Steve Howie, He was also on Shameless, which we talked about on our March Madness TV show theme song bracket.
That's right. Yeah, full disclosure. I mean, you talked about wanting to put the Reba theme song, Survivor, on the bracket challenge. And I was like, nope, because the episode's coming.
I know. I so wish it was. But I knew we were getting ready to do our episode. So she kind of got snubbed.
Yeah. And this is kind of like a continuation of a birthday celebration. I obviously wanted you to have the pick for your actual birthday.
Of course. You would never forget that.
No, never. And then I wanted to give you an album that I was pretty sure you'd like. You like the show enough.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. But happy continued birthday.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of Oklahoma artists lately. Do you realize that?
Have we?
Yeah, we talked about the All-American Rejects are from Oklahoma. Well, I guess this is Reba's kind of the second one from Oklahoma.
Is that a lot?
Well, given the rest of the podcast, I don't know if we've had too many.
Fair enough.
But what's ridiculous, remember how we talked about how the All-American Rejects were in the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Reba is not in the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame.
What?
Even though the All-American Rejects have been for 16 years.
How is that? Feels like an oversight.
It does, doesn't it? I can't believe it.
Or, like, do you have to pay something to get into that one and she just never bothered?
I don't know.
Because sometimes there's, like, a fee associated with it.
Could be, but yeah, we should petition them for that. Can we?
We can do whatever we want.
Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame, if you're listening, you know what to do.
Yeah, how dare you? Correct your error.
Let's make a case. Here's our case for why Reba should be in the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame.
Yep, here we go. Ready? Why not?
Yeah. That's good. That's not the direction. The whole episode is kind of us building a case, I think.
Oh, okay.
But that's our opening argument.
Our opening statement is just, why not?
Think about it. You know, Reba Nell McEntire, who you probably mononymously know as Reba, was born in McAlester, Oklahoma, back in 1955. So you got that going for you, state of Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was the middle child in the family of 6. Well, one of the middle children obviously doesn't split directly in the middle. Anyway, she comes from a long line of champion steer ropers. Genuine cowboy lineage.
Don't see that every day.
No, you don't. Probably in Oklahoma they do, though. But normally you don't. She and her siblings helped out with cattle on their ranch. Her mother, Jacqueline, was a teacher and a librarian, but she was also really passionate about music and dreamed of being a singer herself. So she really encouraged that love of music in her kids. They would actually learn to sing in harmony while they were on road trips to go see their dad participate in rodeos.
Cute little bonding experience.
Yeah. By the time the McEntire kids were in high school, Reba had learned to play the piano and the guitar, and the trio of siblings started performing under the moniker The Singing McEntires. A little bit of, like, Cowboy Von Trapp family going on.
Yeah.
In 1971, they actually even released a single together chronicling the life of their grandfather, which is pretty cool. They started doing some pretty big gigs as a backing band and a support act. Reba said, "We were a bunch of kids barely in puberty who didn't go to bed until almost daylight after some of our shows." That's dedication. And also kind of the dream for kids, I think.
Yeah.
No bedtime.
No rules.
But When Reba's oldest brother left high school, the trio kind of, like, soft disbanded. They're still siblings, but they stopped performing much.
Well, yeah, I mean, can't have a trio with only two.
No, it's true. Then you have a duo, and what's that?
Yeah, I mean, look at the trio of us on the podcast.
Yeah, you, me, the mixtaper.
The mixtaper, yeah. Nice little trio.
After the trio kind of had their little sunset moment, Reba herself went on to study education in music at Southeastern Oklahoma State University and kept on singing in the meantime. So, she's an alum, Oklahoma, staying local.
Exhibit B.
One of Reba's performances happened to be in the presence of country musician Red Steagall, who invited her to sing for him. All three siblings actually showed up and went to the audition.
That was actually at a rodeo competition, I believe.
Yes, it was.
At least she was discovered at a rodeo.
Yeah, she, I think, was singing the national anthem.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. But they went in to sing for Red Steagall, and Reba just blew him away. She sang Dolly Parton a cappella, and he said, he privately told their mother, he said, "I can't take all three of them, but I could take Reba." He said, "She's got something a little different." And take her he did. In 1975, sorry, Oklahoma, Reba moves up to Nashville and signs with PolyGram Mercury Records.
Oh, maybe Oklahoma's mad.
Bitter that she left?
Yeah.
I don't know. When she goes to Nashville, they set her up in style with this Nashville sound, soft country kind of style. People also call it countrypolitan. You might know it if you've heard it. If you listen to a lot of like 70s country, you're probably very familiar with the Nashville sound. Her first record produced a couple minor hits, notably I Don't Want to Be a One Night Stand, and she started playing around Nashville, which also actually helped sharpen her famous comedic wit. She didn't have her own backing band, and some of the house bands around town couldn't play country in Nashville, Tennessee.
What?
Yeah, I know. And so she just had to get up there and start telling jokes to fill the time. But good for her.
Insane.
I know. Well, it worked out. She's probably one of the funniest people in, like, her banter is excellent.
Oh, yeah. I've seen enough interviews.
Mm-hmm. By 1979, Reba would have her first two top 20 hits and four other top 40 singles. It was enough to finally make her own band, which actually also featured her siblings back in the picture.
I wondered if they'd ever come back into the picture.
They did, as a matter of fact. Her third, fourth, fifth, and sixth records were enough to keep her afloat, but they got reviews like promising, but not yet accomplished. So she's like right on the cusp for six albums, which is an amazing amount of persistence and patience. She stays really right on the cusp of something special all the way throughout the early 80s. But in 1983, she decided to make some changes, you know, mix it up and really take control, as she says, of her own career and her own sound. She negotiates her way out of her contract and signs on with MCA Records. After pitching a couple of unsatisfactory songs for her seventh record, Just a Little Love, the label's president was like, "You know what? Just find your own songs instead of taking what we give you. Like, you have our permission to go a little creatively off the rails." So she did. She found Somebody Should Leave and How Blue, which would each top the country songs chart. Her eight albums into her career. It brought new, better reviews like she's regained control of her music and her life. People called her the finest woman country singer since Kitty Wells, which is a pretty high honor, to be honest.
Sure.
It earned her the 1984 CMA Award for Female Vocalist of the Year. And on her ninth album, she actually released the only track she's ever written by herself, Only in My Mind. That's pretty much the context and the point in her life we're at when we get to Whoever's in New England, the album we're talking about today. She's been on the grind for actual decades, and she's just now starting to see real success and recognition. And Whoever's in New England was definitely a huge part of that transition. It's her 10th studio album, which is so wild. I don't know. It was recorded in the latter days of 1985 and was released on February 10th, 1986. Whoever's in New England is pretty much her breakout hit. Notably, it hit number one on the country albums chart, a first for Reba, and its two singles, Little Rock and the title track, also hit number one. It led to Reba being named CMA Entertainer of the Year in 86, which is no small feat. That is the honor of honors that the CMA gives out. The album also earned her her very first Grammy at the 29th Grammy Awards, her first of three wins and 17 nominations in her career. Today, Whoever's in New England has been certified platinum for selling over a million copies, and she's not much of a songwriter in particular. She's another of those country musicians who relies a lot on outside songwriting. So, Whoever's in New England doesn't get a bonus point for her writing these 10 tracks. And maybe I guess that's why the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame has been holdouts. Maybe it's about songwriting.
Maybe.
I don't know. Either way, there are still some huge hits on here. But from that point on, you know, after Whoever's in New England, Reba is a star. She starts to become a household name, certainly one of the biggest names in country. Her stage show started to grow. Her albums started to get a lot more traction. She launched an acting career. In 1989, she actually landed her very first role alongside Kevin Bacon in the movie Tremors.
Mm.
She's also worked on a lot of other stuff in the meantime. Obviously had 6 seasons of her own mononymous sitcom that ran from 2001 to 2007. Actually, 8.7 million people watched Reba's finale. Reba the Person was actually nominated for a Golden Globe for Reba, the show. So it was a pretty award-winning show. No slouch of a sitcom. And of course, recently she's been in a chair on The Voice for a few seasons now.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if the mixtaper will revive any of his facts about The Voice. You know, we've had a couple of voice hit and runs in the past, but who knows? Anyway, to date, Reba has put out a whopping 32 studio albums. Her latest, called Stronger Than the Truth, came out in 2019. As far as awards and accolades go, you know, I talked about all the Grammys and stuff, but she's also got the second most Academy of Country Music Top Female Vocalist awards. She's won 7 times. She's got the very most ACM Favorite Country Female Artist awards with 12. And, you know, I mentioned that she was the CMA Female Vocalist of the Year. She was actually the very first person to win that award 4 times in a row. Other 4-time winners since her include Miranda Lambert, Carrie Underwood, and Martina McBride. Reba also has the second most CMA award nominations of all female artists with, I mean, just an astounding 51 CMA award nominations. She's even co-hosted the ceremony several times. In 2018, Reba earned the Kennedy Center Honors, and she was inducted into the Grand Ole Opry in 1986, even before Whoever's in New England was released. And in 2011, she made it into the Country Music Hall of Fame. At this point, Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame, you're 13 years behind.
Shame on you.
I know, you gotta be at the cutting edge. Other Reba trivia tidbits that may be of interest to you, Connor, or you, the audience. She's been dating actor Rex Lynn for a couple years now. I know, Connor, you know him as Kevin on Better Call Saul.
Kevin Wachtel.
Mm-hmm. He's also on Young Sheldon. He's in Lethal Weapon.
Yep.
He was in Django.
Yep.
Really successful actor. Pretty cool. She's also taken on 18 major headlining tours, as well as co-tours with big names like Brooks and Dunn, who we talked about in episode 111, Martina McBride, George Strait from episode 116, Kelly Clarkson, Brad Paisley.
Mac and Mac.
Mac and Mac. Reba McEntire and Martina McBride.
Yeah.
Maybe that's, I don't know, but what if that's what they called the tour?
Call it the Eminem tour?
They get sued for that. Unless it was sponsored by Eminem's.
I think you could get Eminem's to sponsor an Eminem tour.
Maybe.
Also, you could go the route of like a mac and cheese sort of thing.
You lost me.
Mac truck?
Oh, mac trucks. Yeah, that, I guess.
Macaroons?
You think just macaroons generally? Like the food group?
Yeah, macaroons. Well, the food group will.
I guess it's not a food group. Like the general classification of
the
pastry dessert.
Of dessert.
Yeah. Anyway, on that note, I think it's time for some Fact or Spin. How about you?
Already?
You know it.
Look at the time.
I know.
Time to bring in our star witness, the mixtaper.
Our star witness to plead his case before the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame. Yeah, I bet they didn't know all the things that he's about to tell us.
He's a character witness.
He's sure a character. Can confirm. Get in here.
Hey, it's me, the mixtaper.
Hello, mixtaper.
I swear to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth, and except for the stuff that's a spin.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's kind of what you do every week.
I promise everything I say here before the spin at court shall either be a fact or a spin. No deviation.
I'll keep that in mind. That's really reassuring. I'll rise the dishonorable me presiding.
The dishonorable dastard.
Well, you're not presiding, you're a witness. I'm the one that has to judge.
Oh, I'm both witness and judge. You're the jury.
Okay. Well, I feel like
I don't know what's happening. I've lost the thread. Let's just get into it.
Yeah, let's.
Coming down the spin at red carpet, we've got a star-studded event here.
Oh, really?
Of who's who of the Factor Spin universe.
Uh-oh.
Coming down the red carpet.
Wait, that doesn't mean a lot of repeats, right?
A lot of interesting information to be had.
Oh, no.
Which star would you like to see first?
Show me the plane hat.
She caused someone to lose their seat to a hat.
No way. You're lying. You're kidding, right? It's not.
No, I'm not kidding at all.
Wait, really? The plane hat?
Yeah. Not kidding at all.
I'm so excited. I can't wait for this to be true. So in the past, you've said that the artist has given up their seat on a plane to someone else who's flying a hat.
I've said it a couple different ways, but yeah.
You have. Yeah, and in this case, you're saying...
I would say this one's had the most deviation from fact to fact compared to our other returnees.
Yeah, that's true. Previous times this fact came up, the first was in episode 42, Gabrielle Aplin lost a seat on a plane to a hat. Radiohead, Tom York lost his seat on a plane to a hat in episode 53. Then, a long gap, Beyonce in episode 96. Beyonce stole someone's seat on a plane with a hat. And this is its fourth time back.
Indeed.
So Reba's the one with the big fancy hat. Is she flying with it or sending it on a journey without her?
She's flying with it.
Okay. What kind of hat is it? Talking cowboy hat? 10-gallon?
Indeed, cowboy hat.
Hmm.
Big, black, bedazzled cowboy hat.
Okay. And why, again, can't she, like, hold it or wear it? Put it in an overhead bin?
Well, she didn't want to wear it.
Okay, didn't want to wear it.
And she already had a carry-on and a personal item.
Sure.
They said we'd have to check your hat. She wasn't about to have that.
No. Obviously, I guess it sounds like she's unprepared, but she needs a seat. Does she talk to someone and say, look, see this hat? I really need it to be where your butt is, and that'd be great. Or does she... Like, how does she get the seat?
She simply buys a second seat on the plane. She works out a deal with the airline and says, I'll buy a second seat, which gives me another personal item and carry-on as if a person would be there.
Oh. And
I'll use that for my hat.
So does she put the hat in the seat or use it like an extra carry-on?
Well, she puts it in the seat, but not in the seat she bought.
Right. Wait, what? Not in the seat she bought?
Correct.
What seat does she put it in?
The one next to her.
Oh, but she didn't buy the seat next to her. It just happened to be empty?
No, that one was full.
Wait, that one was full?
Uh-huh. The seat next to her was purchased already. She purchased just a random seat on the plane.
Okay. And caused someone to move?
And then once boarding the plane, convinces the person sitting next to her to switch seats with her hat.
To switch seats with the empty hat seat.
She says that the person was quite lovely about the whole situation and was more than willing to move for her hat.
I'm so used to post 9/11 travel, like just buying another seat on the plane at the gate. Feels so foreign, like so impossible.
I know, right?
But it's totally, I mean, she was around well before that. So I think that's definitely feasible. But what you're saying is nobody really lost their spot on the flight, like in the past.
Not on the flight, just lost their seat.
People have been kicked off the flight for this hat. But this one's just that they had to move seats. It's a little more believable. Where was she flying?
Don't know.
Okay. I think this is not true.
Not true? This is a spin?
No, I think this one's a spin. Here's why. Reba's a cowgirl. We talked about it. Like, she worked on a ranch. I feel like the cowboy hat is such low-hanging fruit.
It's like one of her iconic hats. What are you talking about?
Well, I know, but, like, it is, but that's exactly why you put the plane fact here. Because she has an iconic cowboy hat and a look that I'd be like, oh, yeah, of course Reba would fly with a cowboy hat.
Right. Just as a counter-argument, not, I don't really care one way or the other. Sounds like your mind's already made up. But you realize that in order for me to have found this fact, it's probably about somebody with an iconic hat.
Well, that's true. Well, but to remind you, the original iteration of this fact was that the artist lost their seat because of a hat. So you would have had to change it initially and the second time.
Might have.
Beyonce is the first one that kicked someone out with the hat. And that was 100 episodes in. Well, and the other thing about it is, I'm just trying to gauge how far in advance you foresaw Reba. Because you've said since the very beginning, it's about an artist so big we can't miss him.
Yep.
And I mean, Reba definitely fits that bill. You knew about Reba beforehand.
Sure.
But if you're bringing back a lot of facts, I think this one's a spin.
Okay.
Or, oh, it could be true because you're bringing back a lot of facts.
Oh.
And you wanted to disguise this one.
Last chance.
It's a spin. I think it's coming back up again. This can't be the end of the plane hat saga.
This is a spin!
Oh, yeah. Good.
See, Oklahoma Hall of Fame board. Reba would never kick somebody out of a seat for a hat. Let her in.
No, she's courteous.
Reba, you know, does have an iconic black bedazzled cowboy hat.
Of course. I would guess she's got an established, safe way to travel with it.
Sure.
And also, she probably doesn't mind wearing it.
Which red carpet returnee would you like to interview next?
Show me the Santana worm.
She has a worm named after her.
Oh, gosh, this is the worst. That is awesome. So I don't remember what the Santana worm was called because it was just fake and I dumped it out of my brain immediately.
Dang. What episode was Santana?
101.
101, really? That long ago?
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't remember. I didn't apparently write down whatever BS way I named it.
See? You dumped it out of your brain, too.
Yeah, that one was a spin, but this one, I'm telling you, it's true.
So what's Reba's worm? Is it a worm? I guess Santana just had an animal named after him.
It is a worm.
Reba's got a worm. What's it called?
The Reboid.
Reboid? Spell it.
R-E-B-O-I-D.
Okay. When was it discovered?
Yeah, it was discovered during a casting call in 1990.
During, sorry, a casting call?
Yeah.
What? Is Reba being cast to play a worm?
No.
Okay.
She's being cast to fight worms.
Fight worms.
Named after her.
Whoa. Why is she fighting worms?
Because they're attacking.
Right. Yeah, great. Yeah, sure. What are they attacking?
The town.
Which town? What media is she in?
She's in the 1990 movie Tremors alongside Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, okay. I don't know anything about the movie Tremors. That's great.
Yeah, giant worms attacking. Have you seen any of the trailers for Dune?
Yeah, I have.
You think the giant worm that they ride in the trailer, but evil and attacking a western city?
Okay.
Tremors is a 1990 American Western themed monster horror comedy film.
And she gets the role. She fights the worm. And this is in the movie. Like, I could watch Tremors right now and see a Reboid.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't called a Reboid in the first movie, but yeah.
What? What's it called? Do they name it?
Well, it's not really named. They're just like, giant monster worm. Ah.
Okay. Why do they call it a Reboid?
Tremors have since had, like, a ton of, like, spinoffs and sequels. It's like a whole cult monster franchise.
Sure.
And in one of the later movies, after it got bigger, they revealed the name of the giant worm, the scientific name, you know, of the worm to be a Reboid in honor of Reba McEntire, who was one of the stars in the first one. In fact, Tremors 5 apparently came out in 2015.
Oh,
actually, hang on, there might have been one even more recent. Oh, in 2018, a direct-to-video horror monster film called Tremors: A Cold Day in Hell, also known as Tremors 6. Was released and had one as well. So as recent as 2018, you could have seen one of these.
Wow.
But as they were expanding the universe, they eventually released a bunch of information about the Reboid. And apparently its scientific name is Reboid.
Reboid McEntiris.
If that would be a good secondary word for that.
It's a little on the nose.
So the full classification is, so it's a Reboid, and its classification is Animalia bilateria, Cephalopoda coleidea, Cataris americana. That's like its classification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this actually is a little more believable than perhaps a real worm being named after Reba. Like scientists finding a worm and going, this one reminds me of Reba. It
reminds me of Reba.
Yeah, I think that's a little absurd. But you did a good job at making this sound plausible, very feasible.
Sometimes that makes you say spin anyways.
That's true.
You don't trust it.
No, I don't think that's it this time. What I think it is this time is, do I think, again, you would have had the foresight to do that for Santana? It's possible that you've seen Tremors and you know what the worms are called and you figured out the Reba connection way back then. But I don't think you had the foresight for this. I think Santana was like kind of a spur of the moment thing, or you were like searching for another artist and found that and were like, I could make it about Santana. Oh, but it's so true sounding. I'm going to call this one a fact, actually.
Whoa! He came full circle.
I did come full circle. I think it's possible that you've seen Tremors, and I think it's possible that you had seen it when we did Santana.
Locking that in?
Yeah, I'm going to lock in fact, but the worms only come up the one other time. I don't have as much info to go on here.
Well, that's locked in. Here's a picture of it.
Usually when you send the picture first, it means that I'm wrong.
Well, apparently I gotta shake up my patterns. You're figuring it out, because this is indeed a spin.
Yeah.
This is called a Graboid.
Just changed the grab to Reeb.
Yeah.
That's low.
I basically just eliminated the G and changed the A to E.
Wow. Well, I should have gone with my gut on this one.
Should have.
It would have been way cooler if they named it after Reba. What a neat little tribute.
I also have not seen Tremors.
Okay. Well, I don't know what your Kevin Bacon number is. That, by that, I mean the number of Kevin Bacon movies you've seen. See, Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame, Reba does not have deadly town-eating monsters named after her.
Apparently, in October 20th of 2020, a Tremors 7 called Tremors Shrieker Island came out directly. Oh, so actually,
so the whole, you could have seen it as null and void. You know, it's false information in there.
You actually could have seen a Graboid as late as 2020. Anyway,
that's a bummer.
Yeah.
Tell me about her ghost detecting equipment.
Well, she has ghost detecting equipment.
Yeah, this is the worst. Ryan the ghost, huh?
Yep.
This is the longest running joke.
Did I have the foresight to know Reba was coming?
Yes, I feel like you could have. Every time you do it, too, I feel like I have to recount the story of Ryan the Ghost.
He's had many incarnations.
Yeah, it started in the same episode as the Plain Hat. Actually, episode 42 with Gabrielle Aplin. Then, and you just keep lying about it, Ice Nine Kills had ghost detecting equipment in episode 66. Bob Dylan in episode 61 thought he heard a ghost dog, which was somehow different than a regular dog. Elton John didn't own ghost detecting equipment in episode 70. In the 90s singles, you lied about someone owning ghost detecting equipment. Jukebox the Ghost didn't own ghost detecting equipment, but that one was fairly, again, on the nose. Taylor Swift doesn't own ghost detecting equipment. And now Reba. Why is Reba hunting a ghost?
Well, she's been haunted by one.
Okay, what kind of a ghost? Friendly? Mean? Pepper?
What? Excuse, what?
Ghost peppers.
Oh, pepper. Gotcha. That threw me so hard. Yeah, no, her childhood home, ranch, was haunted by Ryan the Ghost.
Okay, Ryan the Ranch Ghost.
Yeah, Ryan the Cowboy.
Sure. How do they know? How does it manifest itself? Is it moving stuff? Is it moaning in the night? Is it causing chills in the air?
Reba said that it would come to her when she was trying to sleep and make noises in her bedroom.
Oh. Okay, so when she was young, I feel like she left. I mean, we talked about she moved to Nashville in the 70s. She's like a teenager. When does she get ghost detecting equipment?
Well, when the ghost follows her to Nashville.
What kind of ghost detecting equipment does she get?
She got state-of-the-art electromagnetic field meter.
That's it?
Just an EMF reader.
Okay.
State-of-the-art, though.
Some of these have been way more complicated.
She also hired a team of paranormal activity investigators, but that's, I don't think, factored into the dollar amount that I have.
No.
I don't think it is.
Maybe not. You want to bait me, but I'm not going to do it.
It absolutely was a bait.
Yeah.
She spent $50,000.
Oh, good. Wow, that worked.
She spent $50,000 to hire a NASA chemist to help develop a non-hot substance.
What?
That could be used with this EMF reader.
A non-hot?
Yeah, like it was like, you know, because like ghosts are cold, right? So it's supposed to like find non-hot substances that can't be seen. Like ectoplasm? I don't know. I don't want to go so far as say ectoplasm, but that's what it says. Okay. Non-hot substances is what this $50,000 EMF reader is supposed to be able to pick up.
I don't know. And does she find anything is the last question.
Ryan the Ghost still haunts her to this day?
Mm-hmm. How does she know he's named Ryan?
Told her when she was a kid.
How did it do that?
It's a ghost. I don't know. Maybe she named it that for all I know, but she said from a young age, that's what she called it, was Ryan.
So to this day, she's haunted by a ghost. She spent $50,000 on detecting and getting rid of it.
Yep. I think she spent more, right? Because later in the article, it talks about her hiring a team of paranormal activity investigators.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, this is paranormal activity investigators. They searched her house and every concert venue she went to.
Oh, that's what happened with Taylor Swift, is they had to go through and sweep all the venues for ghosts, right? Or Elton John.
Oh, yeah, that was Elton John.
Uh-huh. Taylor Swift, they had to go sweep all the venues for like living creeps. And you expect me to believe this is about Reba?
Yeah.
You expect me to believe that after all this time, ghost detecting equipment's been about Reba?
Sure.
Like, if anything, that's like a B plot on her sitcom. I don't believe for a second that Reba is the target of Ryan the Ghost's ire. I feel like this one's a spin.
Okay. Locking that in?
Yeah, I'm going to lock in another spin. It's been correct the last 7 times to say spin, so.
This is a truth spin.
Okay. Yeah.
Did you get scared? Did you get scared there for a moment, though?
The eyebrows went up. I was like, huh? But I didn't really get scared. I was pretty sure.
Could you imagine after you just went, you expect me to believe that if it had been true?
Oh, I would have really eaten my words on that one. Look, she loves her kids and never stops. She's got gentle hands and the heart of a fighter. She's not afraid of ghosts. She's a survivor.
Who are you going to call?
Reba.
Reba McIntyre.
Yeah.
Reba, 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 Reba McIntyre, Reba, Reba.
She ain't detecting no ghost.
But yeah, Ryan shall return again.
Yeah, he'll be back. Yeah, yeah. So will all the rest. The plain worm and the plain hat and the worm worm. I got those mixed up. Imagine if someone lost their seat on a plane to a worm. Or if they named a hat after her.
Oh, man. That's funny. What a flub.
Yeah, it was. Well, the only other fact, if it's still like a red carpet parade, there's only one more like fact that will return, and it's a fairly recent one, and it's the Dying at Sea one that you talked about on SZA and then Adele. Every other episode now has a Dying at Sea fact. Practically, if that's what you've got.
She almost died at sea.
Oh, really? All four of these facts are duplicate facts?
Yeah, it's a red carpet.
This is the hardest one for me.
Yeah?
Because Reba has clearly been on the schedule longer than the SZA episode has been recorded. So you've had plenty of time to do your research and plenty of time to figure this one out.
Yep, totally look at the schedule.
You do.
I do, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I know you say that like it's something the audience is like, oh, he never looks at the schedule. But you do.
Sometimes I do. I don't look at it as much as I should. I could probably be way better at tricking you if I looked at it more.
Well, think about what you did way back on the Rascal Flatts episode where the one was a lie and immediately after it was true.
That's the first time I did that, actually.
Yeah, it was. And it really threw me for a loop. It elevated the whole concept of factor spin.
Yeah.
So Reba almost died at sea.
Yep.
The last two times, this has been about a casting in a scrapped Titanic remake.
Sure.
Is this the same?
No.
Okay, good. How does Reba almost die at sea?
Well, she was almost cast in the not scrapped epic blockbuster Titanic.
Oh, the real Titanic.
The real movie, not the...
No, not the real Titanic. Okay, touche. You're right. I feel like that was implied, but it's good to have the accuracy. Reba was almost on the real Titanic. When did the real Titanic movie come out? It's a 90s thing.
It came out in 1997. On December 19th, to be exact.
Okay, so... Is Reba auditioning for this, like, the part of Rose? Is she supposed to get a different part?
No, she was not supposed to be Rose.
Okay. Jack, then.
Nope.
She can't be Jack. She's a survivor. Who's she supposed to be?
Maybe that's why she ended up not being in this.
Oh, yeah. You survived too well. Can't be in Titanic.
Yeah, can't be in this. No, she was supposed to be cast as the unsinkable Molly Brown, played by Kathy Bates.
I mean, I talked about it in the last episodes, probably the SZA one. I haven't seen all of Titanic, so I don't know it well enough to know who that is, which is an unfortunate advantage for you.
The unsinkable Molly Brown, also known as Margaret Brown, was an American socialite and philanthropist. She was a survivor of, maybe that's why they wanted to cast her. She was a survivor of the Titanic,
yeah,
which sank in 1912. And she used the one that unsuccessfully tried to urge the crew in lifeboat number 6 to return to the debris field to look for survivors.
So why not Reba? What's wrong? Why'd they not do this? They pulled an Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame on us.
Unfortunately, it became clear after casting. She was cast as it.
Like, in it?
She was formally cast as Titanic. But
oh, wow.
When it became clear that the production of the film would extend well beyond the initial plan, she was forced to turn down the role because she had already, before accepting that role, scheduled concert engagements that conflicted.
This is tough.
Tough, tough, tough.
I actually kind of am leaning towards the fact.
I mean, I wouldn't lie about all four, right?
You sure would, and obviously have previously.
I wouldn't bring back all four returners and not have one of them be true.
Well, that's my concern. Why would you bring back all four recurring facts? It's not like this one's even been that long ago.
Nope.
And you were kind of dodgy when I asked. Like, you first said it would return, and I said, oh, is it about someone we already have on the schedule? And you were kind of suspicious in your response to that.
Was I?
So I think Reba's a strong candidate.
So you're going with fact?
Yeah, I'm going to go with fact, but I also think we should officially change it in this iteration to she almost survived at sea, because she was supposed to be the survivor.
I'll allow that.
Although almost survived at sea also does make it sound like she died at sea, but it was close.
She died at sea. Makes it kind of funnier.
Yeah, it does.
This.
Wait, oh, but the survivor thing, she sings the song Survivor. Obviously, you'd put it with a character who's a survivor.
Factor spin? Need an answer.
And this isn't a remake. This is the original Titanic. Yeah, I think this is a spin.
Spin? Whoa!
I'm going back on it. I think you just said all these to say them.
Say.
And I think this one's also a lie.
Lock that in?
I would like to lock in spin. I'm going down with the ship on this one.
This is a true fact!
Oh, no, I was right. Oh, I was right, but I was wrong. Dang it.
Oh, the first returning fact to reach its conclusion. Also the youngest.
Yeah, really? Wow. It had a 4-episode arc. Well, 5.
5-episode arc.
And one of them was a B-side.
Kathy Bates and Reba actually did team up later in 2006 in the 2006 adaptation of Charlotte's Web.
That's right.
Lending their voices to Betsy and Bitsy.
Yes, she's a goose.
It's Kathy Bates and Reba.
So this is a fact. Reba was cast in Titanic and then turned it down.
This is a fact. Yeah, had to turn it down, unfortunately.
Wow, I'm amazed. I should have known this was true. The survivor thing was nice and suspicious. That really was kind of the nail in the coffin for this.
Yeah, and I couldn't decide where it made the most sense to give you this one. And so I just let you kind of pick your own order for all the returnees.
I'm kind of surprised you did all the returnees. And I also figured the reason you would do that is because one would be true.
Well, it's because I had cool Reba trivia that connected to most of them. I mean, the Tremors thing, the connected to the worm, the hat. Yeah, so I, like, she just had connections that could seem plausible to all, except for the ghost.
The ghost was, like, so far out. But you couldn't sacrifice the bit for that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine if you said it was going to be a red carpet of returning facts, and I named the other three, and I said, tell me about her ghost, and you're like, oh, she doesn't have any. That would be astounding. Well, the saga of Ryan the Ghost continues, and the rest of them, but we've resolved Died at Sea.
Indeed. You finally picked someone who...
Again, though, I feel like that doesn't count, because I picked her, and then you found the fact, because I had picked her.
Actually, that's not the order that happened, then.
Wait, really? Whoa.
I guess it kind of is how that happened, because I didn't pick the fact until after you had scheduled it, but I had learned the fact quite a while ago, actually, when I was looking for good spin potential, and so I just Googled and found a list of, like, interesting facts about famous artists. That one was on there.
Huh.
I learned about that a while ago, and I've kind of been keeping it in my back pocket for when a Reba episode came up. And then when it got scheduled, I decided, you know what? Let's bring it up early, like I did with the roommates thing.
Sneak it in here.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the SZA one was good. She was on a diving board.
And yeah, and then it had a chance to come up again and be almost kind of true in a weird way.
Yeah, because Adele likes Titanic.
Yeah.
Not bad. Well done.
Thanks.
Another 50-50 in the books.
Classic.
Mixtaper, we'll see you next week for more facts. And hopefully, they're all new.
Until then, Oklahoma, put Reba in the Hall of Fame. I've shown you her character.
That's it, yeah. The witness, make your closing arguments.
Yeah. The witness is released. The defense rests on this witness.
Are we defending Reba or prosecuting Oklahoma? The Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame?
I think we're prosecuting.
It's unclear. Well, the prosecution will not rest until you put her in the Hall of Fame.
But I am dismissed from the podium with one final... Yeah!
Objection. Strike that from the record. Anyway, welcome back, Connor.
How's it going?
It's going okay. I feel like I should never miss returning facts.
And yet this time you missed two of them.
Yeah, I know. Well, I knew that no more than one of them could be true, right? What are the odds that several returning facts were about the same artist?
That'd be nuts.
Yeah, it would. So it's like I have such good odds, and to still go 50-50, it was rough. But that's the game. Let's talk about the album cover of Whoever's in New England. It's Reba with a very big belt buckle on a dress. Belt on a dress, not very functional.
No, but very stylish.
Looks great. Yeah, very stylish. So, speaking of stylish, is her hair.
Yeah.
Holy 1986. The perm, the mullet, like, it's the whole package.
Yep.
It's great. She's wistfully looking off stage right.
Looking over at where the vines are coming up the side of the house.
Yeah, it's probably the direction that New England is in.
Oh, maybe. Be a smart place to look.
Yeah, I suppose it would. It's fine. I don't know. I actually honestly think it's kind of better than most country album covers in the mid to late 80s.
I was going to say for its time, I think this was perfect.
Yeah, for now it feels a little maybe dated, but
yeah,
honestly, I think it's a good match for the songs. And
I mean, country in general, a lot of the times just puts pictures of a close-up of the face of the artist on their album. Yeah. So at least this is like full body, and
it's true. My biggest complaint is the stupid color they picked for the album title.
Yes.
How it blends perfectly into this wood.
The color itself would be okay if one of two things happened. It was as big as the name Reba, because then it doesn't blend in with the house.
Uh-huh.
Or it just wasn't lined up, being split by the siding. Right? If it was like on the beam and not on the seam of a piece of siding, like, it'd be way more legible.
Yeah, beams, not seams. Come on, MCA.
And then the other one is the black text that's also kind of being split by it above Reba that is hard to make out. It's so tiny.
What? Where are you looking?
You don't see that?
No.
You don't see above the name Reba, the black text?
Above of the name Reba?
Yeah, above the name Reba.
Where it says whoever's in New England?
Yeah, that's so hard to read. It's so tiny and black.
That's what I've been talking about. What are you talking about?
Oh, I was talking about her last name.
Oh, no, I have no trouble with that. It's yellow. That's fine.
Yeah, no, but it's still hard to read because it's being split.
But it is still silly that they put it right on the seam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. The same things still apply, but it also applies to both of them.
Yeah.
I was looking above, like, actual Reba. I was like, there's no text there, and what would it even say? It's off-center, like...
You had me very scared. Yeah, when I said above Reba, I see how you got confused.
Yeah, because it's not really black. It's more of, like, a brown color that matches that board perfectly. It looks like whoever's Reba. It looks like what it says from afar. Yeah. Whoever's Reba McEntire.
It says whoever Reba... Because I can't make out the word McEntire. I mean, if I like get a zoom in on the picture, like on my monitor here, right, I can like make it out because it's nice and blown up.
Yeah, well, nobody in 1986 was looking at their monitors.
And like if you look at like the Spotify, like when you pull up the album and it's like really tiny up in the upper left, right, like you can't make out anything but the word Reba.
No, well, that's frankly all you need to make out.
Yeah,
well, let's talk about the tracks on Whoever's in New England. We got 10 of them, and boy oh boy are they country.
Listen, I can't stop now.
No, you can't stop now. We've only just begun. But up first is Can't Stop Now. What a high energy track. One of my favorites on the album right off the bat, because I just love the jump start that it gives you.
It does. It hits the ground at 60 miles an hour. It's already going top speed.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It doesn't need to accelerate at all. It's already there. Full gas, no brakes.
Yeah. And it can't stop now.
The brake line has been cut. There's no stopping.
Yeah. I really love just that plucky kind of string instrument style to not only Can't Stop Now, but to most of the whole album that's not slow ballads. There's a lot of good steel guitar.
I was just about to say.
Took the words right out of your mouth and put them in my own.
Gross.
And then spat them out to the audience.
Those words were in my mouth. Why don't you put them in yours?
I also really love a lot of the vocal harmony on Can't Stop Now. It sounds excellent. It kind of contributes just to the overall atmosphere of it. Reba didn't write the song. It's by Gary Nicholson and Wendy Waldman, but what a classic. Also, fun fact, on the entire album, her brother, Paik McEntire, Paik, P-A-K-E, is credited with some backing vocals.
You said Paik, and I immediately went to Patty Cake.
Yeah, it's short for Patty Cake. It might not be. I don't know if that's true.
Patty Cake, McEntire, Paik.
Yeah. Anyway, they did get the duo back together a little bit.
Very nice.
Yeah. Can't Stop Now is a strong contender for playlist pick for me, honestly.
Really?
I feel like how this is going to shake out is that you're going to take a ballad that you really like, and I'm going to have to take something like Can't Stop Now or Little Rocker. You know, we'll go get there.
Okay.
I don't know. This just seems like the way I predict this going.
There's good odds.
Yeah. Heck of an opening track. What about You Can Take the Wings Off Me? Slowing it way down. Can't Stop Now, Can't Stop. You Can Take the Wings Off Me really slows down a lot.
But doesn't stop, so still holding true.
That's, yeah, fair. It's by Troy Seals and Eddie Setzer. And it's a lot more piano-based, actually. Still, I mean, a healthy dose of steel guitar.
She has such a pretty voice for a ballad.
Yeah. Honestly, she's got a great voice for the fast song, too. Especially when she jumps up into the Too Late, babe.
Good voice in general, but...
She's got a good voice. I don't know if she'd have a good voice as a general. Yelling at soldiers and stuff, I don't know, but...
I think she could pull it off.
As a musician, it's good. This song slows down so much, I'm looking like even the first lyric is I've never been in with the fast crowd. Now she denies the fast crowd.
Maybe this is why Oklahoma won't let her in. She's just contradicting herself.
Yeah, sure. What do you think about like the premise of the song? This guy will be the first one to watch the angel fall, so you could take the wings off of me. Like, this person's gonna, like, I don't know, be some kind of corruptive force. That's wild.
I mean, I don't think it's meant to be corruptive.
No, not really. But like taking the wings off an angel.
I think it's meant to be more romantic, like I'm falling in love with you and I'm an angel, so I'm an angel that's falling.
Sure.
I don't think it's meant to be, oh, you've corrupted me and I now am not worthy of these wings.
No, it's not. I mean, not corruptive maybe is a bad adjective, but it's just the angel stopping, like ceasing to be an angel, becoming more human. I don't know. It's inherently like a falling.
There's a lot of different ways this could be interpreted. This has several.
Yeah, there are. And it sounds sweet, so I don't think it's the super aggressively fall from grace kind of way.
Could be the undressing kind of way.
Like she's wearing actual wings.
Yeah. Could be like, now that I've come down to be with you, I don't need these anymore, but, you know, put them in the closet, hang them up on a hanger. Don't let them get wrinkled. I'll need them again when I go back to work.
Winkled.
Winkled. It's like her uniform for when she goes to angel work.
Oh, like she's going to put the wings back on later. It's just a temporary thing.
Yeah, like in the morning when she goes back into angel work.
Like, she does lay him down carefully. Yeah, I don't know. It's a great question. Angel work goes back into angel work. The commute. Ridiculous. It's such a short song.
But it's very pretty.
It is very pretty. Actually, I think a lot of the songs on this album are short. I mean, short content-wise. Two verses, couple choruses. Length-wise, it's actually the second longest song on the album, which I think is really interesting. You know, Can't Stop Now feels like it goes by in a hurry. You Can Take the Wings Off Me kind of indulges a little bit and goes really slow.
Yeah.
And then we get the absolute icon.
Title track!
Yeah, whoever's in New England. Now, actually, so I was familiar with Reba from the TV show and, like, as a famous country singer until I heard whoever's in New England. I don't know if I could have named you a Reba song other than Survivor from the TV show.
Oh, okay. I'm about to say what?
Yeah. No, for real. I didn't know any of them. And
really? Like, you didn't know Fancy?
No, not at all. I still don't.
Really? Still don't know Fancy? Like, most famous song?
Yeah. I know. Here's what I know from Reba. Survivor and what's on this album.
That's nuts.
I know. It is. But the reason I decided I needed to look into Reba was that infamous country music class. We looked at whoever's in New England and we listened to it and it was just excellent. I loved it. So I had to dig in a little more.
Nice.
Yeah. It's one of Reba's breakout hits. Biggest track from the album. It was a single written by Kendall Franceschi and Quentin Powers. And I'm sure you know the Barry Manilow song Weekend in New England, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't, you should. This song was written kind of as a response to that, actually. Answer songs are like a staple of old country music. They don't do it so much anymore, but if you start digging, you'll find a lot of them in, like, the history of the genre. And Whoever's in New England was kind of meant to be a loose follow-up that expanded on the themes that Barry Manilow talked about, but kind of from a different perspective, the point of view of a scorned lover instead of this wistful guy wanting to go back to New England for a romantic fling. When can I hold you? When can I touch you again? This one's kind of the other side of that. Wow, like, look at who you're hurting and leaving behind when you go. It came out in January of 1986, and by May, Weekend in New England hit number one on the charts.
You made me watch the music video for this right before we started, and I can't get it out of my head.
I know. It was a mistake to watch the music video because it's never going to leave my head when I listen to the song now. It actually was Reba's first ever music video. It was filmed on location at a couple different historic sites in Boston, including the Trinity Church and the John Hancock Tower, but it is a little bit melodramatic, ridiculous, dated. I don't know how you want to call it. It was fun. I liked the little snowball fight that this guy got into with his mistress. I think this song is too forgiving, if I'm honest.
Well, do we have confirmation he actually cheated? Or is he just flirting with this girl? And then, like, when he's in the airport, he realizes, wait, I've got a loving wife waiting for me.
Well, that's the other thing, too. On one hand, I feel like it's too forgiving. And if he is cheating, drop him like he's hot, right?
Yeah.
But then, also, we don't really have anything beyond her speculation and the fact that he goes to New England a lot.
Yeah.
All she says is, you just spend a lot of time in Massachusetts. Like, you must have some girl up there waiting for you, huh?
Yeah.
It's all just conjecture. But I do love the way that they kind of leverage that suspicion into some of these lines. Each time duty calls, you got to give it all you got with all your heart. Like, that's clever. This whole second verse about winter up north and blinding snow that causes you to leave the world you left behind.
Well, and what's interesting is, I'm trying to think through the lyrics. I need to pull them up real fast and look through. Is it just the music video that's biasing us to think that it's him cheating with a woman?
Well,
because whoever doesn't apply to him, maybe it could just be his boss in New England.
You know, that's a great point, too.
Whoever you're going to New England for is done with you. I'll be waiting for you to come on home.
That's I've never interpreted it as anything but cheating. Because it's so strongly implied. But you're right, it could just be he's very busy at work. Maybe she doesn't suspect him of cheating and she's just really implying it.
I mean, is she really? I mean,
no, because she says in the first verse, it's very evident. Business must be booming, or could something else be moving in the air up there?
It's true. She does say that.
She puts it out there right away. But really, other than that, you're right. There's not much evidence that she's even suspicious on a, like, literal level. But she does give him a place to come back to all the time. And
I think that's very emblematic of the philosophy then as well.
Yeah, that's true. It is 30 years old.
In the 80s, it was all, you know.
40. Oh, it's 40 years old.
Yeah. In the 80s, you know, oh, I got the traveling husband that works all the time, and I'm the supportive housewife. That was, like, the sentiment, I guess.
Yeah. Best part of the music video is the kitchen and the spiral staircase she has in her house. Awesome.
I wish I had a spiral staircase in my apartment. I don't know where it would go.
I wish I had a second floor. It's a great song. It's the most popular song on the album, and another one that I wouldn't be surprised if it makes its way onto the playlist. But we'll see. If it does, you know, I'll believe it when I feel it.
Well, I haven't felt it yet.
Yeah. I'll believe it when I feel it.
Has some great guitar work.
It does.
Like, it's another great ballad, but to me, the standout for this one was the guitar.
I can't believe how ballad heavy the first side of this record is. Like, it's Can't Stop Now, and then the rest of it. And then the second side is Little Rock, but I mean, at least it kind of picks up with One Thin Dime again. Very ballad heavy record. But I'll Believe It When I Feel It. It's by Chris Waters, Tom Shapiro, and Bucky Jones. And it's a clever twist of believing it when you see it. I like it because she's, you know, gone through the end of this relationship and everyone tells her, oh, you'll find someone else, like plenty of fish in the sea. He's not worth it. There's someone better. And she's like, I don't believe it. Like, it's hard to wrap my mind around that from where I'm sitting right now, but I will believe it when I feel it. If that's the thing I experience again, I'll believe it, which is kind of silly because, of course, then it's already true. But you get the point. I think it's just such a clever way to express that sentiment. Actually, I guess one thing I didn't mention in Weekend in New England is the synth. You know, it feels very 80s because
we didn't talk about that.
No, but it's got that synth behind it. I'll believe it when I feel it. It's like a good bounce back from that, I think. Synth country is always just such an interesting beast. I also think Believe It When I Feel It's a good blend of piano and guitar. We kind of had one or the other in the last couple songs, and this one's a mix right in the middle.
Fair enough.
I like the call and response style of the guitar. Follows those vocals really nicely. Anyway, we'll believe it when we feel it.
And until then, I've seen better days.
Yeah, I've seen better days. You guessed it, another ballad. A long one. This is the longest song on the album.
But it's still only 3 minutes 55, so, you know, going back to 2 episodes ago, it's really not that long.
Yeah, I know. Whew. It's true. Half the length of some of those. I think I've Seen Better Days ends up being a little forgettable.
It's good when I listen to it, but yeah, like, it didn't leave an impression. I think because it's, you know, the fourth ballad in a row.
Yeah, we've been steeped in it so far, and this doesn't really change anything. It's slower than all the rest of them.
Can't stop now. No. Too many ballads in a row. Can't stop now. Oops, all ballads.
Oh, gosh.
That should be a contender for the name of Connor's Hippin' and Hoppin' album. Oops, all ballads.
Yeah, I think it's the slowest. Melodically, it has the least, like, motion to it, and it's the longest. It just feels like everything's kind of working against Better Days.
Fair enough.
Like, what does it even mean? I've seen better days when the rain was pouring down and he had his loving arms wrapped around me. Is she saying that that's the better day, or has she seen better days than that?
Yeah, no, I think she's saying that the verse is all about, like, things being nice, right?
Yeah, things are good. Oh, but the, like,
the day itself is crappier, but
the rainy days.
On those crappy days, because he's not out working or doing whatever, he's just inside with his loving arms wrapped around.
In New England.
Around her, right? So, like, even though
yeah,
it's kind of clever in the sense that, like, the day itself, the weather's worse, but it's a nicer day.
That's true. Yeah, I read into the second verse and I got there about the same time you said it. All the kids are out to play, lollipops and good times. They look so much like mine, but he's taken mine away. That's the line that clicked it, which is funny because that line doesn't feel like it should be the linchpin that's holding this whole song together.
Yeah, but we're finally up to another upbeat song, Little Rock.
Holy crap, we sure are. If Whoever's in New England is the song that got me to check out Reba in the first place, Little Rock is the song that sold me on her.
Okay.
Wow. I love Little Rock. It rocks. It's the second of the record's 2 singles. This one spent a week on the Hot Country Singles chart in the U.S. when it came out. So this makes Reba's 2nd number one. Her first 2 number ones came from this album.
I can't believe you didn't know Little Rock either. That's another one that I'm surprised you didn't know before hearing this album.
Nope, had no idea what I was missing.
This is the one that I was anticipating you would pick for the playlist.
It's probably my highest likelihood of being picked. Yes. I love the pun. It's kind of, you know, you read the title and you're like, oh, is this about that city in Arkansas? Right? It's kind of a head fake because, no, it's not about that. It's actually the exact opposite of Whoever's in New England, where, well, there's varying opinions, right? I've always thought of it as an infidelity song. She's kind of the unfaithful lover, slipping off her wedding ring as this marriage is crumbling and falling apart. But people have also said maybe, you know, it's a little more of a woman leaving a loveless marriage that she only got into for the money. So choose your own interpretation. Choose your own adventure on Little Rock. But I think it's better as a cheating song. I'm married to the good life, said I'd be a good wife.
Yeah, I took it as getting out of a loveless marriage, not cheating necessarily.
So, I mean, I guess they're not mutually exclusive.
Just that, like, she's done. She's taking off.
Technically, if she's not out of the loveless marriage, well, I guess it doesn't have to be cheating.
Yeah.
Is she leaving the marriage or is she cheating?
To me, I thought she was leaving.
Take a chance tonight and untie the knot.
Yeah, that one line I could see.
And it don't mean nothing when you can't get a good night's loving. It all feels very immediate to me. And maybe that's because it's faster.
I think she's come to the conclusion kind of suddenly and immediately, but I didn't think it was like, I'm just going to cheat and then still be in this marriage. I took it as, I'm done, I'm leaving, and I'm starting tonight on finding somebody better.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it's, again, pretty open-ended.
But, I mean, it just, that hook. Little Rock.
I know. Yep. I love it. The guitar part at the beginning is fantastic. I think everything about this song is perfect, actually. I think start to end is 3 minutes and 7 seconds. It's a really tight song, lyrically, musically. The harmonies are awesome. The melody is so hooky. And I could listen to it just on repeat, just forever.
Yeah, the Little Rock hook does not get worn out at all.
No. And it's such a breath of fresh air in this, like, I don't know, slog of ballads. It's not bad. I like the ballads. And again, like you said, on their own, individually, they're fine. We've just been through four of them back to back, and I feel like we've been crawling through mud, like from a tempo and mood standpoint. Little Rock is a great shot of adrenaline, wakes you right back up.
So the next song, If You Only Knew, as I'm sitting here, makes me start to question if I can make a concept album out of this.
Yeah. First of all, absolutely, definitely another pump the brakes kind of moment.
Sure. The whole song starts from the perspective of what seems like a friend.
Standing at the door. That's what friends are for.
Expect me to be supportive because that's what friends are for or whatever. Yeah. And whatnot. And she's like, what did he do this time to set you off? And if you only knew what single girls go through or whatever. So it's like, it could be like, hey, Little Rock, I've decided I'm one out of this marriage and I want to go find something better. And she's left and gone to stay with a friend who's like, what's he done now? Are you sure you want to do this?
Mm.
If you only knew. And like thinking of just like whoever's in New England being like he's busy all the time. Like there just seems like a thread here that maybe I could pull on to make a concept album if I really wanted to.
I don't know. I think that's just because all these songs are like the longing kind of love songs.
Yeah, well, that helps. I mean, an Oops All Ballads kind of album makes it way easier.
Yeah, that's true. You tried it with Brooks and Dunn, but there are a few outliers, right? This one has a lot less outlier kind of moments.
Yeah.
If You Only Knew is another one whose melody kind of gets lost on me. Just, we've been to the mountaintop with Little Rock.
Yeah.
And this one kind of washes over you in a really satisfying way after that. And honestly, to look at it, based on those precious Spotify plays, it's the third most popular song on the album.
Well, yeah, but this album, I don't know if it's a recent add to Spotify or if Remus is not very popular on Spotify or what, because this whole album has shockingly low plays.
Yeah, I don't think it's a recent add. I feel like that's just the way it's been. I don't know.
It just doesn't feel like any Remus song should only have like 30,000 plays.
Yeah. I do think If You Only Knew is one of her best vocal performances on the whole album, especially from the ballads, which, I mean, at some point that's comparing apples and apples because they're all so good and kind of similar, but I just feel like If You Only Knew has a little extra oomph. Put your anger down, turn around and go back home.
It's another one that like when it's playing, I'm like, yes, If You Only Knew.
Yep.
But then like it's over and I'm like, all right, what's next?
What's next? One Thin Dime is all it takes up next. I love One Thin Dime. It's like a Toy Story kind of song, right? Sounds like Woody's Roundup, the fiddles. It sounds like something George Strait would release. I like One Thin Dime a lot. That's like my bread and butter of this era of country music. By Jackson Leap and Michael P. Heaney. And it's about a person who walks out on her. And yet again, I think she's just too nice. This person's leaving. She can't convince him to stay. But she's like getting ready to kind of tell him off. There's something you should know. If you find out that I'm the one you still need, it feels like she's gearing up to say, don't bother. But she tells him, one thin dime is all it takes, right? Get to a payphone. These arms of mine are always open. You can call me anytime. How long do you think it will be before this song doesn't make any sense?
I don't know.
I mean, payphones are already pretty much gone, and mostly gone from memory in many of the younger generations.
Yeah, but they're like a retro thing now. Like,
yeah,
they still exist. I mean, as long as pop culture keeps doing stuff set in like the 80s, I think it'll be fine.
I think there's a chance. But I mean, nowhere does she say explicitly that it's a payphone. You need the dime for a phone call. She just says one thin dime is all it takes when you need someone who cares. My arms are open.
Someday it's going to be misinterpreted in a really sad way.
Yeah, in a really confusing and sad way. Yeah, you're right. She does say pick up the phone.
These arms are mine are always open. One thin dime is all it takes.
10 cents. I like One Thin Dime. Honestly, one of my still favorites from this album. We're doing that typical thing again, I think, where I like all the upbeat ones a lot more than most of the ballads. But I like all the ballads too.
There's just so many of them. I think the upbeat ones stand out to you.
That's it. That's what it is. Yeah. It's not a long album. 31 minutes. I think she makes the album feel a lot longer with the tempos and the songs that she includes. I'm not surprised this was a breakout hit. So many of these songs are stellar songs. I just feel like I'm getting slow blitzed. And the next part of the slow blitz is Don't Touch Me There, track number 9. This one was also written by Michael Heaney. Reba's version of Don't Touch Me There, I think, was the first one released, but it never charted. I think it was maybe overshadowed in popularity by Charlie McLean's version when her album came out a year later in 1987. That version made it up to number 20 on the country songs chart. It's a really curious kind of song. She basically tells this person, you know, you can hold my hands, you can kiss my lips, you can lay your head on my shoulder, maybe even get a little bolder, etc. But when it comes to my heart, you can't touch my heart. It's kind of like a what's love got to do with it, but countrified. Last time I gave my heart so sweetly, it broke. He broke it so completely, and even now, it's more than I can bear. Now, someday I know I'll try again someday. How's that sound in the song? What's that lyric actually delivered as? Because that's a horrible... Hold on.
Yeah, it's not great. But also, you see One Thin Dime. Sorry to jump back.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
Is all it's going to take. Like, kind of fits like she left the dude in Little Rock. Been out trying to find something, but now she's thinking she might want him back in One Thin Dime.
Still concepting.
Yeah, sorry.
And the guy in Little Rock is so rich that One Thin Dime is like nothing to him. So is Don't Touch Me There in that paradigm of a concept album about her leaving a loveless marriage? Is this about her heart being broken from the loveless marriage and she's talking to someone new, or is it loveless marriage guy returning and she's saying, look, you also can't love me. It's a loveless marriage. I'm going to keep it that way. No touching my heart.
I think it's a different person.
Okay. I think that makes the most sense.
I think it's a different person. She's like, don't touch me there because, you know, I'm not ready to let myself love again, right?
Yeah.
But then she does get touched there, either by him or by someone else later on before the final track.
The wings come off. And the final track, to make that same mistake again, is kind of the exact midpoint between a ballad and something more upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
It's this little, like, classic country kind of, not shuffle, but you'd know it if you heard it. It's honestly such a good concept. I love that it starts with a chorus, and the whole hook of it is, if loving him too much is why I lost him in the end, I hope I can live long enough to make that same mistake again. Like, yeah, I've learned from my mistakes and I've grown as a person, but I'm gonna continue to love deeply, even though it hurt, because it was worth it for the experience. It's structurally such an interesting song, because it doesn't really have any verses. We kind of just move very seamlessly through all the parts of it.
Yeah.
And it's the album's shortest song, too, by a couple seconds. I'm glad to see the steel guitar come back on this one.
I'm officially locking in concept album.
You're going to lock it in? Really?
It's a concept album.
Okay, well, I can't wait to hear you talk through it. You're going to talk through it in Final Spin?
Sure.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do a Final Spin. For me, I like this album. Really do. I don't know if I have much to say about it. You know what I mean? Like, to listen to it, it's a quick listen. It's great. A lot of the songs stand alone well, and they obviously are very cohesive as a blend. But yeah, I don't know. Musically, I'm giving it an 84. There are some really standout moments and some really normal moments, but nothing's bad. Not a single thing on this whole album is like bad musically. Lyrically, I'm also giving it an 84. A lot of similar themes. I think we're kind of in a bit of a thematic rut for most parts of whoever's in New England. I think she does a good job if you're going to stay in that thematic rut. I think all these songs do a good job at being different enough and distinct enough and having a unique angle enough that they're fresh, but it doesn't have a lot of like momentum as an album. It doesn't really move much. I feel like the story you're about to tell as a concept album is that she's with a guy, he leaves, and she tries to move on. The end. Like, that's all 10 of these songs can kind of fall into one of those three baskets.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it's fine. 84 for lyrics. Instruments of production, I'm giving a 77. It's a little bit slow, I guess, is an adjective I'd use to describe the album. And again, you know, she didn't write these songs. So I guess I can't fault the lyrics or the music too much, because she didn't have anything to do with it. She just performed it. And her performance is great. The vocals are excellent. But yeah, that's just where it lands. And for overall vibe, I'm giving it an 86. I think because it's a quick listen, and because so many of the songs would be so good standalone, and because it's Reba's breakout album, I always just leave with a good feeling. Little Rock alone probably skews that average a lot, but still, great. No bonus point. The overall score for whoever's in New England is an 83.7, and I actually very surprisingly agree, like very much so, with its placement on the ranking list. It's number 373. It's below Back in Black by AC/DC, which is a strange point of comparison.
That is weird.
And it's above Murmur by REM. And I think it definitely belongs above Murmur, and I think it definitely belongs below Back in Black. So that's me. All right, Concept King, let her rip.
So, can't stop now. She realizes she's starting to fall in love with this guy.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't know how I let myself, but I can't stop now. You can take the wings off of me. Hey, she's telling him, I'm ready to settle down. I'm ready to marry you. Except that good life she talks about later.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever's in New England, she realizes the good life isn't always that good.
Yeah.
She travels all the time.
Rich. business guy. You're in your meetings. You got your charts.
Yeah. Maybe he's, you know, having some extracurricular activity on the side, snowball fights and all that.
Boston doesn't have any better things to do, apparently.
Yeah, I'll believe it when I feel it.
She's being told there's other fish in the sea.
Yeah, but she's not sold yet. She's still sticking by her man, just like whoever's in New England.
That's the iffiest link in the chain so far, because it starts with when you left. Like, he leaves, and he's gone.
Well, he left, right? He's on a business trip, right?
Well, but then I'd find someone to take the place of you. Someone else would hold me. Nobody's telling her.
Yeah.
You could go find some side piece.
No. Okay, you're right. So sorry, here's what it is. Right? And whoever's in New England, she's saying, you know, there'll be a home for you, but he's chosen this other woman, right?
Okay.
In New England. But she's saying, hey, you may have chosen this woman. She's going to get tired of you, and I'll be here waiting for you, right? When she's done. A little too forgiving, like you said, but that's what's happened. He's left. So now.
Okay.
I believe it when I feel it. These people are like, look, he's gone. There's been more fish in the sea. You'll find somebody else who treats you right. And she's like, I'll believe it when I feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen better days is her reminiscing on the good days with the guy who left. She still isn't ready to quite move on until Little Rock, when she goes, you know what? Maybe it's time to take this ring off and actually go find those better fish I keep hearing about.
Go fishing.
Go.
In Arkansas.
Yeah. If You Only Knew is her one skeptical friend being like, hey, it's not going to be as easy as you think. If You Only Knew what it's like to be single. You haven't been single in a long time. Right? And she realizes that they're right. It's not that easy. So then One Thin Dime comes along and she's like, hey, Mr. Hubby who left me, give me a call and I'd come running back to you because it's rough out here.
Okay.
But then she does meet somebody who maybe has that potential to be that big, that better fish. But she's not willing to let herself be fooled again.
She meets a nice fish.
Yeah, she meets that nice fish. But, you know, she's got her walls up now.
Uh-huh.
So she's saying, don't touch me there.
In the heart.
But then she makes that same mistake again, where she falls in love despite her plans.
You know, I like that it ends on that hopeful note. She hopes she's invested enough and lives long enough in this new relationship to fall so deeply.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Yeah, that all works what you described. But again, you really only had three baskets to put these songs in. So I feel like it was...
Well, that's why I'm saying it's a concept album. I mean, if there was a million baskets I had to put it in, it wouldn't be much of a concept album, would it?
Sometimes.
Tells a story.
Well, it could. I don't think it explicitly tells a story.
That's half the fun, is turning something that wasn't a concept album into a concept album. I think this has been by far my best attempt.
I don't know. You had some good ones in the past, but you've also had some bad ones in the past.
With no plot holes? I mean, this one doesn't have any plot holes.
That's true.
There's no songs that you have to kind of just ignore. They all fit.
The hardest one is I'll Believe It When I Feel It.
Well, it's as long as you make the assumption he actually did leave for somebody in New England.
Right.
If it's fine. But that's the only jump you have to make that isn't explicitly said, is that he's left her for another woman.
Yeah, but the end of Whoever's in New England, he comes back.
In the music video. That's the music video by Sing You.
You're right.
Music video is not canon to the concept album theory.
Fair enough. Well, good attempt. Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame, what genius is behind this album?
Yeah, I mean, how could you not put this in?
Come on, get Reba in the Hall of Fame. This is our plea.
I like the album.
Yeah, good. It's a pseudo birthday present. Ballad guy, ballad full album. Reba fan, Reba album.
I think you could have picked a better Reba album.
I maybe could have. I like The Breakout. I like Little Rock.
Yeah, it's good.
I like Whoever's in New England.
I'm more familiar with some of her other stuff. How do you not know songs like If I Were a Boy?
Oh, does Reba sing that?
2009 album, I believe.
Beyonce sings If I Were a Boy.
Well, she has a version, I'm sure.
She has a version of it? Well, I know the Beyonce version.
All the Women I Am, Reba McEntire, 2010, If I Were a Boy.
I don't know the Reba version. I know the Beyonce version.
I don't know the Beyonce version.
Oh my goodness, we live in different worlds. We experience the world in different ways.
I believe my mother owned the Reba All the Women I Am, so I think I listened to this one growing up.
Huh.
Has Turn on the Radio?
I do know that one, but...
There you go. And then the 2009 one has Consider Me Gone. You know Consider Me Gone, don't you? Consider Me Gone.
No.
You gotta know the chorus to Consider Me Gone.
Never heard it.
Really?
No.
Surprises me, because, yeah, my dad, big fan of Reba. My mom, big fan of Reba. Well, grew up in a country household.
So then, I mean, there's clearly an atypical bias towards you knowing it. And...
Well, I just feel like a lot of people like Reba.
Yeah, they do.
Surprise. You didn't grow up with any Reba.
I didn't, yeah.
We came from the same small town, so.
I know.
Reba's one that if it wasn't for, I don't know which album I would take. I've considered, she's come up on the short list of, like, artists I would have liked to bring thing as a pick.
Uh-huh.
But there was like no one singular album, and I didn't want to just keep doing country over and over. I wanted to, you know, I'm trying to spread out genre wise.
Yeah.
So I probably would have gotten to her eventually if you had not brought anything, but she wasn't an immediate front runner for my country picks.
So like a decent birthday present then.
Sure. Two artists in the past 4 weeks that I would have picked myself, but it's fun.
And one that you did pick yourself.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty good birthday spread, right? With Soundgarden in the middle.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good birthday month.
Yeah. I wanted to make up for last year when I remembered your birthday.
I'm giving this one 8 Hall of Fame nominations out of 10.
Do you think 8 Hall of Fame nominations is going to be enough? Looking at you, Oklahoma, when will it end?
When will it end?
8 is kind of where I figured this would end up, honestly. I think if it were just a little bit more, a little bit less ballady and a little bit more...
But the ballads weren't the problem. It's just the, some of the ballads weren't memorable enough. Like, there were good songs in their moment, but they just didn't have the standout power.
It was a fleeting album.
Like, there was the big ones, and then the other ones just kind of were there.
Okay.
And I just didn't feel... Because if it did get a 9, it was going to go in... bottom of the 9s, but I feel like Reba has potential to crack into the 9s with maybe a different album, so I'm gonna put her almost top of the 8s, right between Mr. Misunderstood and Welcome.
Okay, second best of the 8s at this current moment in time.
Yeah, and kind of in a folk country section with Halsey thrown in there.
Yeah, Halsey doesn't belong in the mix, but yeah, folky country E. Sure, I think that's respectable. That's a very high score, actually, placement wise.
Yeah. I mean, that's top 40.
It comes
in at number 40 for me. Oh, no, 41, actually, because I forgot I had to give it 10.
But the one that you gave a 10 was not an album, so...
You're right.
This is a top 40 in my albums.
My top 3 in album order. Honorable mention to Can't Stop Now.
Ooh, starting with the honorable mention.
You Can Take the Wings Off Me, Whoever's in New England.
Nice.
And Little Rock.
Ooh, the first 3 and the second biggest.
Yep.
So all those ballads kind of didn't hit that threshold.
No, I picked 2 ballads.
No, I know, but all the ones that aren't the beginning ones.
Can't Stop Now and Little Rock are just great.
They really are.
And then I picked the 2 bigger ballads, in my opinion.
Definitely you did. Well, If You Only Knew seems to be a winner with everyone, and I'll Believe It When I Feel It also seems to be up there, and Don't Touch Me There is also up there. But if they're bigger for you...
Yeah, but I think I'm picking from my playlist... Taking whoever's in New England.
Okay. Who could it be? It's Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
Right? If it's a response song to him, he's the one in New England.
The menace.
I think your suspicions were pretty correct. After re-listening to this album all the time leading up to this and talking about all these songs, I would regret not taking Little Rock. So it's Little Rock for me.
That's good. Those are the 2 I wanted.
Not only my favorite song from this album, also my favorite capital of Arkansas.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, what a coincidence. Also, my second favorite size of rock.
What's your favorite size?
Oh, big rock. Come on.
Really? Not like large rock?
I mean, those are kind of synonyms.
Boulder?
No, boulder is not even quite the same.
Chuck through a window size big rock?
Yeah. A little rock's just going to bounce right off. Oh, little rock, throw bouncing you at the, off window, the window, you bounce right off.
Yeah, there you go. We both were headed there. Yours was better.
Well, there you have it. Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame. We've made our case. Now it's your turn. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
What's even funnier is we were like, oh, well, maybe it's because she wasn't a songwriter. Maybe it's because she moved to Nashville. No. I looked up the criteria. Ready? Nominee should have been born in Oklahoma. Done. Lived in Oklahoma for part of their life or career. Done. Or operated their musical enterprise out in Oklahoma. Not done. Nominees for the Oklahoma Music Hall of Fame should have demonstrated accomplishments in the field of music nationally.
Done. Get in there.
Nominees are eligible 20 years after their first musical release or noted first national performance.
Done.
Non-performers. Not. They're letting non-performers and songwriters and recording and touring musicians in 20 years after their first documented professional music activity. Done. And categories for induction include folk, blues, country, jazz, R&B, rock, pop, hip-hop, rap, Broadway, religious, classical, contemporary, Native American, New Age, Hispanic, instrumentalist, session musician. There's no reason Reba can't be in there.
She's so successful that she's not even just like listed as a singer-songwriter. It says multimedia entertainment mogul, Reba McEntire.
She's the TV show, right? Too. I mean, yeah. Well, that's wild. Let's get on it, OMHOF. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Happy birthday to Connor. Happy birthday to Reba. When's her birthday?
On Reba Day.
Yeah. Oh, Reba's birthday is March 28th, so it's not that far away.
Oh, you missed her birthday.
I did. Well, better her than you.
Next year, we'll have to make it up to her.
Yeah. If you enjoyed this podcast, like we did, check us out online. We're on Instagram at SpinItPodOfficial, on X at SpinItPod, and on the web at www.spinitpod.com and wherever you get your podcasts, but you already knew that. Tune in next week to hear Connor say funny things like this.
I always forget you're going to do that to me. If I were a playing card, I'd be the Joker.
Wow. Wasn't that fun? Tell a friend who, you know what, pick up one thin dime and call the friend that you want to tell about the podcast on a payphone.
It's going to be a really hard challenge. But if you do it, let us know.
It would. Yeah, but one thin dime is all it takes. One thin dime and a payphone.
Yeah, that's the harder part.
Yeah, you know what? It's not too late. We'll see you next week. And until then,
keep spinning.
You know, if sheep could email, I bet a lot of their replies would include the subject line, Reba.
That's awful.
I know. I just thought about it before the episode, and I was like, I can't tell that in the episode. But I had to say it to you. It doesn't have to be outro banter.
Oh.
I just had to say it.
That's definitely the outro banter. Gross.
Reba. It's funny.
Gross. Ugh, I threw up in my mouth a little bit. I don't even have time to digest that with you. I've got to go put on my wings and go to angel work.
I thought you were going to say you were going to put on your shoes and they were Reeboks.
Stop! Ugh!